Hi, I'm Brittany French.
Hey, I'm Rob McDonald.
And this is the Great Plains Outdoors Podcast.
We're going to talk about everything from fishing and hunting to hiking, paddling, and adventures on the Great Plains. We'll cover it all here.
So join us each episode and hear what's going on in the great outdoors on the Great Plains. Hey folks, thanks for joining us on another episode of the Great Plains Outdoors Podcast. Here we are in August already, and it sure has been a hot one. I am super ready for some crisp mornings and some cool evenings and some nice fall autumn air. I'm really looking forward to that. Rob, I'm sure you are after working the fair for a week in this heat.
Yeah. It has been a hot one the last couple of weeks. And my schedule has been pretty jam-packed. My crew and I, my boys, we were at the county fair, and my wife, the Greenwood County Fair in Eureka, and we jumped into that with both feet. My boys were showing horses and cattle and goats and model rockets and all kinds of stuff, and it was warm. We actually, after the fair, took a quick trip to the Ozarks of Missouri and got in on some trout fishing, and spent a couple days in Branson for kind of a last hoorah before school kicks off.
I feel like Branson, Missouri is the ultimate, especially if you got kids, like quick destination vacation before summer. I feel like many of my friends are there right now with their young ones. I love it.
Yeah, it's a great time.
A lot of good stuff to do out there, especially if you can make it over to Bass Pro Shops there in Springfield.
Yep, for sure. You could
kill like, what, 5 days there in the aquarium? Yeah. Well, this time of year, there are so many things getting kicked off. School's going to be starting along with fall athletics. Hunting seasons are right around the corner, and fall angling can be terrific on the Great Plains. Another thing moving along this time of year is politics, but don't worry, we're not going to stand on any soapboxes today. Primary elections are behind us, and midterm elections will be here before you know it. It seems like more and more that in highly partisan election cycles, some of the legislation that can actually get some traction has a lot to do with the outdoors and conservation, which we're pretty happy about. The Great American Outdoors Act passed in 2020 amid highly partisan political cycle. And that brings us to a time in history that can be a critical pivoting point for the Great Plains Outdoors. We're excited to talk with you all a little bit about that. The North American Grasslands Conservation Act is making some political headwinds recently in Washington, D.C. Our guest today is no stranger to the prairie and the Great Plains. We're excited to have Jordan on. Jordan is the Director of Development at Pheasants Forever and Quail Forever with us today to talk about the true love of the prairie and the grasslands. As Director of Development, Jordan plays a key role in Pheasants Forever and Quail Forever's mission delivery efforts by providing national level leadership associated with all things to development. Jordan sent me his bio, resume, CV a little bit, and this guy is super involved and very plugged in. So I cannot say enough good things about him, and I'm going to try to condense it down just a little bit, but tell you what, he's great. He's a proven leader with his enterprising spirit of 14 plus years in conservation leadership at Pheasants Forever and Quail Forever, and has growth-focused vision for the future. Jordan is a lifelong bird hunter and a bird dog owner with a love of upland wildlife habitat conservation. He possesses extensive knowledge of the U.S. upland bird hunting traditions, and he's equally comfortable in the boardroom or following a bird dog around on the prairie. Jordan is active in his local community and serves on multiple boards and volunteer committees. He's currently pursuing his EMBA at Rockhurst University, and he's a Kansas native currently residing in Overland Park, Kansas. We're going to give a quick shout out to Kansas representing today. He resides there with his family and his two English setters. And just in case you didn't catch it, he loves the uplands. Jordan, thanks so much for joining us. We're excited to talk about all things prairie with you and get to know you a little better.
Oh, it's my pleasure, Brittany and Rob. Thank you for having me on the Great Plains Outdoors Podcast. It's exciting to get together with like-minded folks this time of year with upland hunting season on the horizon and dove hunting season starting next month, and talk about all things habitat, all things upland birds. Hopefully we'll talk a little bit about bird dogs, which is one of my favorite topics, and get into some of the things that people can do to help care for the uplands, which, as you mentioned, I happen to love. So thanks for having me.
Yeah, Jordan, you know, I'm pretty sure that I landed on an article back in June that was on the pheasantsforever.org website that you'd authored. And if I remember, the title was For Love of the Uplands. And that article resonated with me. And through that, I reached out to you and asked if you would have some time to join us on the show. And I agree. I think it works out perfect timing with, you know, September's in the front windshield for us. I mean, yeah, we've got a lot of August to get through, but it's an exciting time. And so I'm excited to talk uplands with you today. And if you don't mind, let's just jump in and talk about the call of the uplands, loving the prairies, unfortunately, the decline of the grasslands. You know, it's been said that, you know, Iowa at one point was primarily grasslands, and now it's all tilled under, you know, what does that look like? We see that obviously across Kansas and the Dakotas. And so the grasslands are in decline, but what does that all really mean?
Well, that's a good question, Robin. You know, I think for me, it really starts with my journey to the uplands, which eventually led me to a career in it, and I've been blessed to work for Pheasants Forever and Quail Forever for the last 14 years and be a part of this great organization, this great mission, and one of the 400,000 plus constituents across the country that are caring for this tradition that we all have experienced and has brought so much to us. I grew up in the greater Kansas City area. My father was not an outdoors person, neither was my mother. From a year early age, though, I think like most young people, I really liked doing stuff outside in nature and had an opportunity to do that where I was living at the time. And my dad, God bless him, he was humble enough to take me fishing, even though he really didn't care for it, but he knew I liked it. And you know, that experience with being able to interact in nature that way really hooked me, pardon the pun. And over time, it just kind of evolved and got more and more a bigger part of my life. I had a cousin who's about 10 years older than me from an extended part of the family that was into the outdoors and always kind of thought it was cool to hang out with someone who was 10 years older than I was at the time. And, you know, looking back on it, he took me with him to the bird dog trainer up in Chillicothe, Missouri when I was 11. And he had this beautiful English setter at the time named Maggie and a French Brittany named Sassy. And my job for the day was to, when the dogs went on point, this old crusty dog trainer, Dick Williams, who recently passed away, was just a great guy. He would get me lined up and make sure the dog was steady. And then I would get to go in and flush the bird. And just being able to see how all that worked, you know, nothing was harvested that day, but just how the dogs interacted with the people, what they were doing, that was kind of the next leap forward. And that led to me getting to go and be the bird flusher for that hunting party for a couple of years. Dog goes on point, they get in position. You know, now people are using English Cocker Spaniels to go in and be the flushers, but I was the English Cocker Spaniel at the time. So I'd go in and, you know, kick the bird up and watch it fly. And sometimes they'd get it, sometimes they wouldn't. And just was really blessed to have somebody that wanted to take me out and do that with me. And that led to me getting more and more engaged and involved in it in high school. The 870 Express 20 gauge pump shotgun that I bought was the first firearm in the Martinchich home. I can't say that that's the case anymore, at least in this Martinchich home. The stable of firearms has grown. But, you know, just continued to progress. And, you know, at the time, especially when you're that young and in that group of people at that time in the 90s, I think because of where we were with the habitat in a lot of places, CRP was going gangbusters. We had a lot of really early successional habitat on the landscape that was producing lots of birds. And all across North Central and where I cut my teeth was in Northeast Kansas. I didn't really appreciate what we had at that time. And over time, you get kind of a feeling of, you know, I really am interested in this for a lot of different reasons. And when you're kind of in your teens and early 20s, you might think, boy, wouldn't it be fun to work for a place where I get to do that type of stuff all the time? But, you know, I don't know that when I started thinking about it, that my intentions were pure. It was more of a self-interest. And then as I got more and more involved with Pheasants Forever in my 20s, I started out as a volunteer. It turned into a way to give back. And now those areas where we hunted pheasants up in Marshall County in Northeast Kansas, I could take you two out and walk you to the spot where I know that I harvested my first wild pheasant. The spot's still there, but the habitat's not there and the pheasants aren't there. And at the end of the day, people that are involved in conservation or in Pheasants Forever and Quail Forever, that's really what this is all about. It's protecting a resource, protecting a tradition in a lot of different ways, protecting quality of life and a way of life. And that's kind of how I got into the organization. During my time with Pheasants Forever, I've had an opportunity to do a lot of really cool stuff. Started out working with our volunteer ranks here in Kansas, our Pheasants Forever and Quail Forever chapters across the state. You know, those are the people that donate their time, which is in a lot of ways your most valuable resource. They're giving their time, their talent, and treasure because they care about it. And then that led to kind of a myriad of opportunities working on some major gift stuff on the first campaign that the organization did that was called the Grassroots Conservation Campaign. And eventually led to me going into the development function full-time, working with our passionate donors across the country to advance the philanthropic support of the organization and do more good. The last couple years, we've been working on this endeavor called Call of the Uplands, which you mentioned, Rob, which was kind of the inspiration for the article that you read that ran in the Pheasants Forever Journal and Quail Forever Journal. I was doing some self-reflection as a component of some other things and thinking a lot about the things in my life that were important to me through the lens of things that I don't know that I could live without, or at least be happy living without. And I started making the list, and top the list, faith, family, country. And then I got to thinking, there's something else on this list. And, you know, you contemplate the things that you have on a list like that. And I was started out thinking of it through the lens of, you know, these are the things I'd be willing to die for. And that's a pretty human quality. There's only a couple of wildlife species or insects that will die for the broader community or die for something. Ants are one of them. Bees are one of them. I find that really intriguing that we have a lot more in common with ants and bees than we really might think about. And then, you know, it just eventually led to me thinking about a speech that Stephen Rinella gave at our national convention a couple years ago, where he kind of challenged everyone that was in the room on this idea of, are you so deeply passionate about this thing that we're all involved in conservation that you would be willing to die for it? And I thought, you know, I think I am. It's a big enough part of my life that I would. And then I got to thinking, well, what does that mean? Well, I love my faith. I love my family. I love my country. I guess I love the uplands. And so it's great for me to get to work with a lot of other people who also love the uplands. And collectively as a giant team, we can go out and make a difference. Now, you mentioned some of the challenges that the uplands face. They're significant. Our native prairies and grasslands in North America are one of the most threatened ecosystems in the world. We hear a lot about the rainforest. This is the rainforest in our backyard. In the last 10 years, North America has lost over 50 million acres of grasslands to an alternate use. They've been converted to something else. And since we're all in Kansas and Kansans, a good way to look at that is that's an area the size of Kansas, wildlife habitat that's been lost, converted. The CRP program still remains one of the best conservation successes in the history of the world, but we've seen a decline in the total acres in the last decade. Big year coming up for that here next year with the Farm Bill on the horizon. Pheasants Forever and Quail Forever is going to need a lot of help related to that. And this Call of the Uplands that we're currently in, this is an organization-wide endeavor for us to try and rally everybody in this country around the uplands. Whether you know it or not, the uplands matter to you. We need grasslands, and grasslands need us. If you like clean water, if you like clean air, if you like monarch butterflies, if you like a place for cattle to graze, if you like beautiful vistas, all of this stuff is directly attributable to grasslands. And that's what Call of the Uplands is really all about. Let's get everyone rallied around more grassland on the landscape, more public access for people to go out and recreate, more opportunities for people from all walks of life to participate in the outdoors, and have just as much diversity in the people wearing the orange caps as we want in the plants that are in these fields helping us create upland birds. And then lastly, this advocacy component. Pheasants Forever and Quail Forever have been involved in advocacy since the beginning. We started in 1982. The CRP program was coming out right after that, and we've been heavily involved in advocacy efforts over the years. And most recently, our team, in conjunction with about 10 other conservation organizations from around the country, those groups being significantly influential, have been working with legislators to bring forth a concept called the North American Grasslands Conservation Act, which was mentioned earlier in the podcast. The historic announcement of that act happened not too long ago, the end of last month, and United States Senator Wyden of Oregon and Senator Amy Klobuchar of Minnesota and Senator Michael Bennett of Colorado helped bring this legislation forward, which would do a number of things. One is that it really makes grasslands relevant. If you look back at what happened when the North American Wetlands Conservation Act happened, it really brought wetland conservation to the forefront of thought in this country and made conserving our wetlands a priority. As a byproduct of that, since that happened and all of the great things that have been accomplished with that legislation and that permanent funding, wetland populations have increased. So this is an effort to try and take that successful model, apply it to grasslands, provide great opportunities for the ranching community, great opportunities to create more public recreation, great opportunities and collaborative opportunities for tribes across the United States, and have a way for us to get more grasslands on the landscape, which is going to create all these quality of life benefits. Oh, and by the way, there's going to be a lot more places for you to take your bird dog to go find pheasants and quail. That was a direct result of the organization's leadership, not only in DC, but also really trying to advance our efforts with the Call of the Uplands campaign. The campaign has three different pillars. There's a habitat conservation pillar, and the working mission delivery goal for that is 9 million acres of wildlife habitat impacted across the country. That's everything from longleaf pines down in the southeast making good quail habitat to working on the sage-grouse steppe for sage-grouse with the ranching community in the northwest part of the country. And then where we are in the Great Plains, doing all kinds of great work for pheasants, quail, prairie chickens, sharp-tail grouse, and on and on and on. And even we're doing stuff now for desert quail down in the Southwest. In addition to that, there was a pretty aggressive education and outreach goal that we set. Fortunately, this little thing called COVID happened, and it was really hard to get lots of people gathered in the same place for a while. The good news is that we've been able to have the campaign help launch a lot of new and innovative initiatives that are going to create more opportunities for people to participate in the sport and get actively involved in the outdoors. And then the last component of that is the advocacy component, which the North American Grasslands Conservation Act is tied to. When we embarked on this journey and built this out, we set a working financial goal of $500 million, which was crazy to us at the time. And what's just been amazing is how many people from across the country, whether it's volunteers, whether it's donors, whether it's conservation partners, private sector and public sector. Now we're seeing it with legislators. People care about the uplands and have activated in this campaign. And we're going to set out to accomplish what we achieved. And our work is never done. This campaign is us taking the organization in a direction where we're going to be working to deliver more and more mission on an annual ongoing basis in the face of the challenges facing the uplands. So that's kind of my story, how I got here, what I've been working on with Pheasants Forever and Quail Forever the last couple of years.
Just a few things, Jordan, just a few things. It's incredible. I love, thanks for sharing so much history and just your involvement and how you got started in the outdoors. I love talking with people on the podcast who somehow find their way into a professional career that's also their passion on the side. And you're definitely one of those fits for that too. So you probably feel extremely blessed waking up every day knowing you get to, you know, drive impact in something that's incredibly important to you outside of your working hours.
For sure. And it's really fun. I can't express that enough. But when you're really passionate about something like this, it also comes with a great deal of responsibility. You know, you wake up every day not loving what you do, but it drives you. And you're always thinking, we've got to figure out how to do more. This is too important. We got to do more. And I just can't say how much fun I've had over the years and really feel like I was guided through my life journey to where I am right now. And that's always a good place to be.
Yeah. So Jordan, I think it's interesting as you were talking, I think there's some details that you mentioned about like chasing birds around in the 90s and what I was right there with you. Like, not knowing what we had or how good we had it. And it's interesting now as I go to places. So I grew up north of Hayes up in Northwest Kansas. And as I go to places now with my kids, like Hayes, for example, or we go to Kansas City or Wichita, and you go into one of those communities and you make, you know, I often make the comment about, well, you know, when I was a kid and we would come to this town, none of this was here. You know, like Hayes is just expanded so much, you know, and now you get into Edgerton and you might as well be in Kansas City, right, as you're coming from the south. And the farming practices, you know, I'll make comments about, well, you know, these were summer fallow wheat fields. So, you know, they were only farmed every other year and there was weeds in the fields and the bird hunting was amazing, right? And now that's Roundup Ready corn, Roundup Ready beans, and you know there's no weeds and it's planted, you know, consecutive years. A lot of what we have now is two crop production, you know, where we've got wheat and then after wheat beans in the eastern part of the state, and just the agriculture practices change, but also the expansion, the urban expansion. And so when we look at that, I guess, what are some of the, we understand, okay, the grasslands, the uplands, the prairie is important, But how do we make a difference? How does this, so this Grasslands Act, and we don't have to get too specific, but you mentioned the Wetlands Act. And I remember that time when, you know, being in elementary and junior high and high school, and all of a sudden the wetlands were a key topic, right? And recycling became this big thing, and we have to make sure we clean up water and take care of, like, you know, quit dumping your motor oil around the back of the shop and stuff that people just did. We're not going to do that anymore. But what does that look like for grasslands? You know, with the wetlands, we set aside flood areas for hunting and for preserve areas for migratory birds. Kind of correlate, what does that look like for uplands?
Well, that's a good question. And, you know, I think one of the biggest things the Grasslands Act will help do is to add some relevancy to the importance of grasslands and all the different ecosystem benefits associated with grasslands. You know, you think about, you know, a lot of the conservation successes that have happened over time. You know, there was a time when Lake Erie was really polluted. And as soon as that got relevant to people and they thought, well, this is impacting how I go about my day and what I'm able to do, then people are motivated to do something about it. And I feel like we're getting to a place now with grasslands and the conversion that's occurred where it's getting relevant to a lot of people in a lot of ways. You know, you think about the importance of having lots of grasslands on the landscape to the ranching community and what happens when there are, you know, fewer and fewer resources available to have your cattle on the landscape, or, you know, you're in a drought and there isn't as much hay production occurring. And then the trickle effects that has, you know, it raises the cost of beef at the grocery store, and somebody, you know, then it's relevant to them. So I think that's one of the things, you know, I think we need to continue to be innovative as a conservation community. And, you know, at the end of the day, know that our best partners are private landowners and the people that are using these lands to make a living, to provide all of the different stuff we need and develop things like the North American Grasslands Act in a way that provides a bunch of benefits. It creates opportunities for the landowners to get more grassland on the landscape in a way that works for their operation. It also creates great outcomes for wildlife and for ecosystems. And we just need to continue to do more and more of that and figure out a way to get more people actively involved in it. You know, I threw out a number earlier that we have 400,000 constituents across the country at Pheasants Forever and Quail Forever. Of that group, about 135,000 of those are annual dues paying members. When you think about the amount of people in the United States who consider themselves pheasant hunters or quail hunters, it's a fairly small percentage. So I think it starts a lot with us, the people in the community. We need to step up the people who are actively using the resource and say, we're here to make a difference and we want to participate and be actively involved in it. You want to pick up the phone and make a difference for grasslands today? You can go to actforgrasslands.org, which is the North American Grasslands Conservation Act website, read more about it, send your legislators a note basically saying, grasslands are important to me, and this is why. Just those little things, becoming a member of a conservation organization, sending your legislator a note, are the activities that don't take very much time, but they're impactful. So we need to grow our team of folks that are engaged and activated in this. And that in turn is going to increase relevance. It's going to provide more opportunities for us to make a difference for grasslands. And we need to keep doing what we're doing. You mentioned some other legislation earlier. there have been some great federal level conservation wins the last couple of years, and we need to continue to build that momentum. Brittany shared that in partisan times, conservation is one of the things that can move through because it is not partisan. It's important to everybody. If you turn on your tap in the morning and you want to take a drink of clean water, conservation is important to you. And so continuing to do that is going to be important as we progress. And I think we really have an interesting opportunity, not just here at Pheasants Forever, but in the conservation community as a whole, especially with all of the different emphasis that's being placed on the environment and all of the different great things that we can do for the world collectively by helping wildlife. It's gotten, you know, a lot more prevalent in the media. You know, you see lots of stuff about it on social media, and there's lots of people that care about it. And now's the time for us to act. We've got to each individually take action while it's being talked about in corporate boardrooms across the country. You know, there people are making conscious decisions to do business practices differently so they can have a net positive impact on the environment, on wildlife conservation. And in a lot of ways, they're kind of catching up to what the conservation community's been doing for quite some time. So it's nice to see that it is getting more and more nationally relevant.
So Jordan, you'd mentioned, you kind of brought it into scope a little bit, the size of the grasslands that we've lost, right? And sometimes I will admit that I lose sight of that often. I live in the Flint Hills of Kansas. And so when I walk out my back door, I live on a prairie. And I've got to drive a matter of ways, I mean, minutes, maybe hours before I get to some place where the prairie is not visible, right? But this act and the work that Pheasants Forever is doing, I think it's important for our listeners to understand that, you know, those grasslands extend into, I mean, that range, is it fair to say, you know, the Dakotas into the prairie portions of Montana, Minnesota, into Oklahoma, New Mexico, you mentioned eastern Colorado, clear into Texas, portions of Iowa. Is that, you know, am I missing some states there? Is that fair?
That's fair. You know, it's really happened all across the continental United States. You know, if you go even farther back into the timeline, the amount of prairies that have been converted is really, really substantial. Not that 50 million acres isn't, but it's really big. And in addition to that, there are other things that have impacted upland bird populations, cool season grasses as an example. So, you know, in some areas there's still grassland on the landscape, but it's not native prairie, and it's something that could be like brome or fescue, which is challenging for quail to make a living in because it's so dense at ground level. So on scale, not only have we seen conversion of grasslands, but we've seen some of the grasslands turn into something that is still grassland. It still holds the soil and all that stuff, but it's not creating substantial outcomes for wildlife. And then there's also been a lot of changes in management that have occurred that have an impact as well. You know, quail are a bird of fire, for an example. And prescribed fire, Rob, in the Flint Hills, you're really familiar with the annual burning that goes on there.
You bet.
So you're in a culture of fire to the extreme.
Mm-hmm.
But there are other places where fire had historically been used and was something that helped that ecosystem. And when you don't have the fire on the landscape, it creates a scenario where a lot of succession can occur, and you still have some of the habitat, but it's not as helpful from a bird production standpoint. So not only have we seen conversion of grasslands, but changes in management practices have been a detriment to the uplands and upland birds as well.
Well, Jordan, is there anything, you know, for our listeners' perspective as far as that love of the uplands, the call of the prairie, what Pheasants Forever is doing that, you know, like you mentioned, reach out to legislature, make our voices heard. I know that's critical. Beyond that, you know, what are action items, I suppose?
Well, I think one of the biggest action items is if you care about this, try and figure out a way to make it part of your routine in some way. Because once something becomes part of your routine, you know, whether it's brushing your teeth in the morning or going to church on Sunday or watching a ball game with your kids, you know, whatever it is, then it really becomes an instrumental part of your life. And I think that's one of the reasons, especially why hunters have gravitated so deeply towards conservation over the years, is because it's become part of the routine and it's become part of your lifestyle. I mean, really, you think about the heart of it, every year there are upland bird hunting traditions that occur on opening weekend, where it's like the Christmas of hunting, or whatever you want to describe it. You're together with the same people in the same place doing the same thing every single year, and it's part of your routine, and then it becomes important to you. So to make it part of your routine, there are a number of different things you could do. You could become a member of Pheasants Forever and Quail Forever and make sure that that membership never lapses. You get the great Pheasants Forever or Quail Forever journal 5 times a year. Every time you get it, it's got great information and it's part of your routine. You could go to your local Pheasants Forever or Quail Forever banquet every year. Make it part of your routine. If you're in a community where there's a Pheasants Forever or Quail Forever chapter that's hosting their annual banquet opening weekend of bird season, go to it, meet the people that are there, make it part of your routine. And I think if people can do that, we're going to get more people that are invested in the idea of perpetuating this tradition, doing things to keep grasslands on the landscape. My final thing is, if you want to learn more about Pheasants Forever and Quail Forever, you can visit our websites. Go to pheasantsforever.org or quailforever.org. We mentioned earlier the Call of the Uplands campaign, which is our aggressive and strategic vision for the future. You could visit calloftheuplands.org. And when you're there, you can not only learn about what we're trying to accomplish, but you could make a gift, which would be greatly helpful. And that's another way to make it part of your routine. Make it part of your annual giving in some way to support wildlife habitat conservation. And then finally, if you're so moved to take action now, you can go to actforgrasslands.org and help rally support for the North American Grasslands Conservation Act by sending your legislator a note.
Those are all super good things to remind ourselves of to do with anything we care for. And that's I'm hearing you and Rob both talk back and forth. It's like, well, we're all really good at walking the walk or talking the talk, but we don't walk the walk. And so those things are just a good reminder. You know, if you're into mentorship, right? Like, take somebody out with you, take somebody that doesn't look like you out with you next time, right? You're into conservation efforts to maintain habitat. Go out there and start removing cedar trees with some groups, reach out to your local PF chapter, see if they have any efforts that they're personally involved in a local area. Those are all just really wise things to get involved with. So I appreciate you sharing that, Jordan. I think sometimes we get caught up in just, you know, what are we focused on doing? And we lose sight of the big picture.
Well, it's my pleasure. I couldn't agree more. And, you know, I think the main thing is wake up every day, go out in the morning, take a deep breath, look around at all the cool stuff that happens outside in nature, and think to yourself, we got to figure out a way to make sure that future generations are able to enjoy this stuff like we've been so blessed to enjoy. And that'd be a really easy thing to work into your routine every day. Just spend some time outside in nature, enjoying it and thinking about it.
For sure. For sure. So with that, are you up for a lightning round, Jordan?
Maybe. This is this this isn't the white lightning round, isn't it? Because if it involves moonshine, I don't know if I'm in, Rob.
No, I think we'll leave that for another time, another pint night or something. But I've got 8 questions here, and I'll just fire them off. And, it's typically a this or that, yes or no. If you need to elaborate, that's fine. Not a lot of rules. So I'm going to kick it off, and we'll see where it goes. Question number one. Got the opportunity. It's you get the day off, weekend, whatever it is. The weather looks good, and you could do a prairie grouse hunt or an upland quail hunt. One or the other. What are you going to choose?
Rob, why do you have to start with such a challenging question?
And they're all going to be like that.
Oh my gosh!
Just kidding. Just kidding.
I don't want to. I don't know if I want to choose. I might upset myself and might upset some people. But if I had to choose, I would probably say a quail hunt.
Okay, fair.
And because quail, especially Bob Whites, are so cooperative with bird dogs.
Uh-huh.
And my two English setters and I could go out with some friends and family and find some quail and hopefully have a really nice time.
Yeah. Understand that for sure. Okay. So number two, you had mentioned the gun catalog at your home. So you're going out on a said bird hunt, and you're going to pick either a 16 gauge or a 28 gauge. Which one are you going to take with you?
Well, that's easy because I don't own a 16 gauge.
Okay.
So if I'm going on that bird hunt, it's probably 28 gauge Browning Satori.
Okay.
Good choice. Got that one dialed in. I like that.
Yep. That one was easy. Okay. Number three, totally different bird hunt, but you get to choose, you finish up coffee, everybody's jumping in the pickups. Where do we go now? And it's up to you. Are you going to head for the Milo stubble or some CRP?
Well, it would depend on what time we finished up coffee. For a long time, we used to go hunt the CRP right at sunup.
Mm-hmm.
And, the more that I've chased pheasants around and gotten involved with a lot of really experienced bird hunters, the more I've come to learn that that's not the best strategy. We were out in Dighton, Kansas, a number of years ago for opening weekend. We got out there really early, sat by the truck, we're having our coffee, waiting for shooting hours, and we could hear and see all of the pheasants getting up out of the CRP and flying to the Milo stubble before you could really even visually see what was going on. So they were leaving pre-dawn to go to Milo. So I would say, if it was like 10:30 in the morning when we got done with coffee, I'd hunt grass. If it was 8:30, I'd probably go to the feed.
Okay, that's fair. Number four, the ideal hunting rig. Doesn't have to be your hunting rig, but the ideal. So there's the traditional hunting pickup, you put a topper on it or not. You have some guys put a big drawer, maybe it's a crew cap, or we see more and more people turning SUVs, especially the smaller Subarus, take the back seat out and you've got your bird dogs in there and They're all wheel drive, get better gas mileage. What's your ideal hunting rig?
A 747.
Yeah.
I like
we're
that.
We're talking about carbon footprint and, you know, we're saving the grasslands.
Well,
get right to it.
you didn't give me any parameters, but I mean, like, if resources weren't an issue, you know, a plane that was big enough to put a truck with a bunch of dog boxes in it, and you could fly wherever you wanted during hunting season and back the thing out and go chase them around. That's the one of the things that has been a really cool experience over the years, is getting able to travel around and experience upland bird hunting in other parts of the country, and especially out in kind of the more arid landscapes. The quail hunting opportunities down in Arizona, and the Gambel's quail and the scaled quail and the Mearns quail. If I had a jet, it'd be a lot quicker than the 18-hour drive from Overland Park to Southern Arizona. All joking aside, what I hunt out of is a Toyota Tacoma with an aluminum three-hole dog box in it. Mm-hmm. And I've got some friends that have some really cool stuff and appreciate their the opportunity to ride around with them. But I typically just have a tub, a big plastic tub. That plastic tub goes into the back seat. It's got dog gear. It's got my gear. And then the top of the aluminum dog box has some space for some stuff. And that's kind of how I've rolled for a long time. And I don't know that I'll see it changing. One of the reasons, and you know, similar to the SUV, the nice thing about having the SUV or the box that goes in the back of your truck is when you get a different vehicle, then you just shift that stuff to the next vehicle. When you have one of these things that mounts on your truck, or you have the bed taken off and then put this thing on, it's like, you know, in 10 or 15 years when your truck's done, what are you going to do with that thing? It's probably not going to fit on the chassis of the next truck that you want to buy. So I guess I'm kind of a minimalist in that regard.
Yeah.
Nothing wrong with that.
Absolutely. Yeah. So maybe that may reflect on question number five, being a minimalist. So you're in bird hunting trip, bird hunting country, wherever you close your eyes and where you picture yourself, where that is. And it's, I don't know, end of the hunt, evening time, feet are tired, successful, you know, got into some birds. Are you going to choose a small town cafe, you know, maybe chicken fried steak or a fried chicken special, something like that, or a college town brewery? So I think about like Gela's in Hayes, or, you know, something like that, you know, IPA that they made there, or whatever, your lager, burger and fries kind of thing. What's your choice?
I like both, mainly because I like to eat.
Especially after a long day in the field.
Probably I guess I'd probably consider myself more the small town cafe type of guy, for a number of reasons. One is, I think it's important for people who are out using the resource to support local communities. And that's one way to do it, you know, buy your gas from the small mom and pop gas station, or, you know, buy your pizza from the local pizza shop instead of the Pizza Hut in the next town. Nothing against that stuff, but it's a way to do that. Plus, I think you get to meet more interesting people in small towns.
Yeah.
You know, there's lots of different people that do lots of different things, and it's got a community feel. Plus, you know, having been in college and drank a lot of beer in college towns, I kind of been there, done that. There's a lot of small towns I haven't eaten in yet, Rob.
Gotcha. Okay. Number six, You've got a window over a weekend, you know, 3 or 4 hours you're going to get to hunt. And you just have to choose, are you going to hunt that first light golden hour, or are you going to hunt that last light golden hour? So a morning hunt or an evening hunt?
I would probably go with the morning hunt, just because I'm kind of more of a morning person and I don't mind getting up early and getting after it. Plus, you're less likely to run into heat issues with dogs than you might in the afternoon, especially in Kansas where, heck, you know, I've seen days out west where it's almost 80 degrees during hunting season.
Yep.
Plus then that day, then you've got the rest of the day to go do other stuff.
Yeah. I'm that way. You know, I like those morning hunts. Getting out on a successful hunt is always fantastic. But then if it's an evening hunt, you get back home and it's dark and you're ready for supper and you've got birds to clean or a deer to clean or ducks to whatever it is. And so I'd rather get out, get my hunting done, enjoy it. And then if I've got birds to clean, I've got more daylight hours to do that. So number seven, it's funny because you mentioned weather and warm temperatures. Number seven, you prefer like an early season mild hunt. So let's say a September day after prairie chickens in the Smoky Hills here in Kansas. High temperature for the day is going to be 65 degrees, maybe some dew on in the morning so the dogs can work. Or would you choose a late season, let's say, you know, Christmas break with some kids and there's snow on the ground?
I'll choose any day where ice isn't involved, Rob. If I had to choose out of those, you know, you threw that whole kid thing into it. I don't know that that really makes it a fair comparison. But if we
can take a kid in September too.
Yeah, if we just said whether there's a kid involved or not, I'd probably choose September. You know, September is kind of a magical time of year because there's still green vegetation on the landscape. It's the beginning of the season. Anticipation is high, especially if you're chasing stuff around in the Flint Hills. And there's something beautiful about being out in that prairie landscape in September before it goes dormant and gets brown and crusty. So yeah. September for me.
Okay. Final question. And I think this one, I mean, it's a this or that, so nothing too crazy. You're hunting pheasants, you're on some walk-in hunting, you know, pick your state, and the cover, you're on a ridgeline, and to your left you can see some cattails, and to your right you see a group of plum thickets. Which one are you going to take the dogs towards?
I'm going to go towards the plum thickets because quail like plum thickets more.
Sounds good to me. Good choice.
Love it. Jordan, thanks for playing around with us. Some people get a little intimidated by that because they just can't pick. They think lightning might strike them down if they pick wrong. But I'm happy to report you're still here.
I am. I got lucky, I guess. You know, it's, you never, I guess, really want to have to choose, but when forced to make a decision, I'm willing to do it.
There you go. Well, Jordan, we can't thank you enough for coming on. It's been fun chatting with you about the different things that, you know, you've done throughout your career with PF&QF and just ultimately what PF&QF is all about. We need them. We need that organization around and we need them thriving. So here's your call to action, listeners, is look up a local chapter near you and ask them to join, go to their banquet, take your kids along, take your wife along. I mean, it's a very family-oriented organization, so we greatly, greatly appreciate you.
My pleasure. Thanks for inviting me on, and thanks all that you two and the Great Plains Outdoors podcast does to sing the praises of the uplands and conservation and mentoring to the masses. It's great to have people that are spending their time trying to get the message out. So keep up the good work.
Thanks, Jordan.
Yeah, thank you for that. Until next time, you guys enjoy this episode and be sure to give our podcast a share and check out our new website, greatplainsoutdoors.com. We'll see you guys later.
See ya.